A community that knows itself takes care of itself. The stories of those who live in the Matsu Borough are as varied as the people themselves. Some you have heard. Some, perhaps, you have not. This is Voices of the Matsu, bringing our stories to life.
And I'm Emily Forstner, your host. Today's episode was supposed to be in celebration of Black History Month. It was supposed to be a two-part episode showcasing two different stories. But sometimes stories take on lives of their own. And this one is no exception.
There's a lot of people in Black history, like me, like personally, like I'm one of those kind of people, like American history is Black history.
We get to know a little better Devon Shaw, a young Black man who grew up in Palmer, who believes in acting with grace as a bridge over troubled waters, within his life and with his music in what we call Amazing Grace.
I was the miracle child.
You may also recognize Devon as the chef at Matanuska Brewery, or as Dee the lyricist, or better yet, the founder and promoter of Rhymefest. It's his recorded song, Hills and Valleys, that we hear in the background today.
I remember Black History Month when I went to school. We learned a lot about, you learn about the Civil Rights Movement. And when you learn about the Civil Rights Movement, at least as far as I'm concerned, most people that I've spoke to, whenever they had went to school during Black History Month, you learn about Martin Luther King, you learn about Rosa Parks, you learn about what happened with the bus boycotts, and then that's about it. And then we move on to the next month. You know what I'm saying? Okay, we don't talk about Marcus Garvey. We don't talk about Bill Cosby and his what he did for Black cinema during that time period. We don't talk about anything. We don't talk about what Malcolm X did, what the Nation of Islam did. We don't talk at all about Black Wall Street and none of that. I'm the last son of Johnny Shaw,
born in October in the interior story. Oh, this time, let's go over. Devon's family originates from St. Louis, Compton, and believe it or not, Fairbanks.
My grandfather came up with this bright idea that he wanted to open up this radiator shop in Fairbanks. So he figured, and this is like in like the 40s, 50s. So he was like, he had the thought of, if I go up there, there's not one up there I can capitalize. So he came to Fairbanks, and the building it used to be in is still up there. And he brought my mother and my Aunt Shirley up here when he came.
His mom grew up and left Fairbanks and traveled the world. And somehow she found her way back to Fairbanks, where she met and fell in love with Johnny Shaw.
So my mom was my age now. My mom was 36, my dad was 54 when they had me. So I'm an only child to her.
And that's how Devon became known as the miracle child. Just a bit of amazing grace. Shortly before he started school, his parents left Fairbanks with Devon and his half-brother Adrian. First to Anchorage, and then Willow.
Willow wasn't very welcoming to us when we got there because we were the only Black family in Willow. So, like, our neighbors used to sick his dogs on us when we would walk down the street. We'd get in fight. Me and my brother Adrian got in fights at school and stuff a lot there.
And a short time later, to Palmer. The year was 1997.
So when we got to Palmer, my dad was really on edge because he didn't know what we might deal with, you know, when we got here. Because, you know, Willow not being very, like, Fairbanks is very multicultural. Anchorage is very multicultural. The Valley and, well, Willow not so much.
But by September of that year, his dad died of cancer. And his half-brother Adrian moved back with his mom in Fairbanks. So now, it's Devon and his mom, living alone in the Felsings trailer park, near downtown Palmer.
It was still very much the old West out here. It was, you know, everybody, all the cops that lived here, all the cops that worked here lived in town. Like, there was, like, you know, no one, I wouldn't say that it was lawless, because that's not true, but it was very lax and lenient to the people who lived here because everyone knew everybody. Different campus, but unique as a family. So I
found that I stand out somehow. The South is such a part of me. Let's not fool ourselves. Being a Black American in Palmer wasn't all that in a bag of chips. I've heard it described as being a speck of pepper in a salt shaker. As Devin remembers it, he was probably the first black person his classmates at Swanson Elementary had ever seen.
My first day of school, I got jumped by four kids on the playground. Actually, how I met my oldest friend to this day, the gentleman who owns Ethereal Coffee, his name is Troy McGlashan. Troy McGlashan is my oldest friend. I've known him since the first grade. The first day I showed up at Palmer in Swanson, I was on the swing and a kid pushed me off the swing. Him and his friends went to jump me and Troy was the only person to stand up. And that's how me and Troy got to know each other. And then after I got adjusted here after a while, I didn't really deal with a lot of, there was a lot of racial tension. Like, I don't want to give that kind of impression. Like, growing up in Palmer, I can count on both hands probably, but like saying that over like the span of my entire childhood on how many like genuinely like, you know, racial situations I ever really encountered, most of it was just ignorance. Most of it were people kind of ignorant to the culture, so they didn't really know, you know what I'm saying? They didn't really know better, or they were like, they'd say something and regurgitating something that they heard from someone older than them and not quite knowing what it meant.
You were telling a story about your first day in first grade, sitting next to a little girl. That's an example of that ignorance, right?
Right, yeah. Her, you know, thinking that my black skin was because I was dirty and she was trying to rub it off of me. Yeah. And actually, it's funny, later on, we ended up becoming friends. I've known her for years. Damn, soon I have family all over town. Brothers, sisters, and uncles, and I hope I make you proud, you know. Like, probably one of my most memorable, like, moment, like, to kind of like the, like a perfect example of what I'm talking about. When I met Merle Jr., I met him in the sixth grade. He used to get picked on by this bully and I stood up for him and he didn't have a lot of friends. So he invited me over to his house on his birthday. Merle, and this will get you understanding, Merle didn't know any better. All he knew was that I was the kid that stuck up for him and he wanted me to show up to his birthday. So I went. We're in Lazy Mountain and we go all the way up there. Now, this is him and his family. They're immediately, as soon as I get there, I realize I am completely out of my element. Like, all the people that are here are like, this is not where I should be, basically, is the best way I could put it. You know what I'm saying? And when I walked in the room, there was a big table, his whole family sitting at the table, his grandfather sitting there. And they used to own a video store that closed, so they had movies all over the place. And my mom was a huge movie buff. And because my mom was born in the 50s, and my dad was born in 39, like, I wasn't raised by Gen X kids. I was raised by boomers. So I grew up watching Vincent Price and Bela Lugosi and you know, all of that. I grew up watching black and white television and stuff. So
right.
I'm sitting here talking to these my elder. I'm there. I'm 12 years old, and I'm telling these people, and I'm like, oh, yeah, da-da-da. And we're talking about stuff that they have no – they're like, yeah, you shouldn't know this stuff. So, like, I'm in a conversation with the older people, and his grandfather was sitting at the table. And he was completely silent the whole time. And he's just looking at me and he's just staring at me. And he's just staring at me and he doesn't stop staring at me. And finally, there's a break in the conversation. And that man looked at me and he leans forward. He's like, what's your name? And I was like, my name's Devin. And he's like, you know what, Devin, you're the first nigger I've ever had in my house. He said, but I like you. And that was the end of the conversation. You know what I'm saying? Like, there was a lot of that growing up. You know what I'm saying? A lot of that. You know, because people would have this misconception. They'll watch TV or they'll watch things, and that's the misconception they have about, you know, African-American people or black culture. Like, they don't get it. So that's all they go by. Like, a lot of the kids I went to school with, most of their understanding of black culture was Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. Like, that's what they knew. A lot of my youth was, I spent educating my friends on, you know what I'm saying, what it was like to be around black people. This is what kept me from life in the piss, but my life to spend what I'm up against is doubters and what is what was once friends. When one wins, we all do. A lot of friends in Anchorage, so all my friends in Anchorage would come out here and I would introduce them to my Palmer friends. You know what I'm saying? And was kind of like the link between my Palmer friends here getting to know, you know what I'm saying, all of my friends that lived in Mountain View and Fairview and all that. So, you know, I guess it was like interesting at first, but it was, I'm thankful for it because it taught me how to look at race. I have a very different outlook on racial division than most people do because of that reason. Because, like, I can kind of see, I think a lot of people take the ignorance of the culture and mistake that for, like racial malice. Like, somebody's, like they're being racially insensitive on purpose. Like, I can honestly say I've never walked into a room and felt like I didn't belong there necessarily. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, I've never felt like that. So there's definitely a difference, you know what I'm saying? But I think being Black in America, period, there's always that stigma that's going to come along with it, no matter where you go. But it's in Alaska, I can definitely say it's not as bad as it would be in places where, like, racism is more better known for.
Since 1997, the Matanuska Borough has tripled in size. It's a lot different.
Yeah, I see a big difference. There's a big cultural change. The valley is becoming more of a melting pot over time. Son of Adam, I bit the apple and had a couple
kids, so I must move. And now I got a deal. Devin and his wife are the proud parents of 5 children.
My kids don't see race at all. I told my son, Poet, he's 10 years old. He got into a fight on the bus last year, and he was really distraught over it. And he was like, you know, my son, he's not a confrontational type of kid. He was really distraught about it. And I explained to him, I was like, son, I didn't realize that by the time I was your age, I had been jumped 3 times for being Black. Like, he has no understanding of that. Like, my son has never, that doesn't even register to him. Like, he wouldn't know he was Black had I not told him. There's a big difference there, and that's a good thing, too. Like, that's a good thing. Like, it shouldn't be so apparent to where he has to worry about it, and I'm glad that he doesn't.
I'm your host, Emily Forstner, and you've been listening to Devin Shaw on Voices of the Mat-Su, produced for Big Cabbage Radio in Palmer, Alaska. Coming up next in part 2 of our episode called Amazing Grace, we get to know more about Devin, but this time in his world as a hip-hop artist in the Mat-Su. Yeah, I ripped the valley because it raised me. Mama moved me up out of the drama where the banks be. Devin's world has always been involved with music. You could say it's in his DNA.
Music kid. Like, my mom was a musician. My dad, music's in him. Like, my dad was a singer. My mom can sing. My mom has an amazing voice. She used to have her own band when she was younger. You know, I was a Motown baby. My mom was a big Motown person.
I got to ask, though, because Motown I can relate to. Who was your Motown favorite?
Oh, the Temptations, most definitely. I was a huge Temptations fan. I got to meet Dennis Edwards when he came up here. I was a big Smokey Robinson fan. I'm still a huge Smokey Robinson fan. I was a big Diana Ross fan. I loved Teddy Pendergrass. I'm big, like, my mom was a huge Luther Vandross fan. Anything Michael Jackson, like, anything that came out of that time period of, like, the Chitlin circuit and Motown and just everything Berry Gordy did, I was a big fan of.
But Devin grew up in the 90s, and hip-hop was what attracted him. He sees himself as a bridge of sort, first bridging the racial gap with his classmates, and now being a bridge for Alaskan artists into that music world of rap and hip-hop.
Bridge would actually be a perfect word. Because I'm so connected and related and so many other people, it's made it easier for me to bridge a lot of the gaps between a lot of those areas. Because if not for Rhymefest and if not for kind of my unique connection, a lot of artists in certain areas wouldn't be able to connect with the artists they connect with.
Devin needed to be my bridge. I was completely ignorant. What exactly is Rhymefest?
AK Rhymefest, we started in 2017. It started out as just a yearly festival that we did to celebrate the artists and the local businesses that were in the music scene. When it first started, we were doing a big show at Vine. It was all weekend.
It started the year before in 2016 when Devin played at another festival near Hollywood and Vine. The owners of the property liked what they heard and saw, and so began Devin's adventure producing what is now called Rhymefest.
That property liked us, and they offered it to us to do our own thing. So that year we did Rhymefest.
Listening to Devin talk, I think sometimes he's as excited about helping other artists connect as anything else.
since the years that we've been doing Rhymefest, there's a lot of artists that weren't even aware. There's artists in Anchorage that didn't even know about some of the artists that were in Fairbanks. You know, there's some of the newer artists in Anchorage that we've been able to give a platform that wouldn't have a platform otherwise.
You can just feel his excitement. I ate up the same plate as the OGs you come to
press. I'm making bangers, my body to chop a game of Sumet. Alaska has some of the greatest talent. Because they were on Rhymefest, they were able to do tours and play on stages that they never got an ability to play on and connect with artists and collab with artists and find studios and distribution with other people that they wouldn't have been able to network or create because they haven't had that link to get there. Hip-hop and R&B didn't have as much representation as, say, as rock and roll and bluegrass and all of that because of the festivals that happened here. So that was our answer to that. And now this year will be our ninth year.
Does hip-hop and R&B do anything to bridge that racial disconnect?
Absolutely.
How so?
Because music is universal. So like, what if I can, you might not feel comfortable with me walking in your house and telling you that, but you'll listen to a black artist that'll explain to you my experience. You might be fearful, you know what I'm saying? For the people that are fearful who clutch your purse when you walk past a black person on the street, but you'll listen to Jay-Z. Music has always had a way of breaking down barriers easier than any other form of media. A lot of people don't understand how unbelievably diverse Alaska is, period. So hip-hop being the fastest growing music in the world over the last 50 years, it's the most popular form of music. It's also the most easiest form of music that people can adapt to and do. All you need is a computer and a keyboard and then knowledge of sound, and you can make your own record in your bedroom. With hip-hop and R&B, I just need myself enough time and discipline, and I can create a song. Something about that and the accessibility of that makes it easier for people like myself. Like, as a kid, I found music. Music was always my outlet. I can find a way to say things that was easier for me to express when I was younger that I couldn't express in this way. I know I can express it through music. And a lot of those ideas that I couldn't tell people straight up, they would listen to what was in my song and be like, I mean, I didn't know you felt that way. Like, music has a way of being able to do that. And so that's part of the reason why it's such a big investment and why we're so passionate about Rhymefest and why we've been doing it and pushing it for so long. There's nothing worse than feeling like you put all of this work and energy into music and something like that and nobody hears it.
Devin reminded me that jazz is like the roots for the blues, and the blues are the roots for rock and roll, and they are all the roots for hip-hop.
Hip-hop is the same general roots as all of those other musics. It's just spoken word. A jazz musician will speak with using his notes, or he's using his instrument itself to explain it, whereas, like, I'm using actual words, the difference. You know what I'm saying? But at the same time, where, like, somebody who loves jazz can tell you they can hear the emotions in the music. It's the same thing. You can hear the emotions in my voice. I like the idea that I could get my message across, and it doesn't matter what color I am at all. Like, my music is what matters. Like, if somebody likes it, they like it. They can't see me. They can hear me, though. You know what I'm saying? So, and that's the beauty of it.
What's one of your messages you want to get across in your music?
Individuality. Love yourself. A lot of my music comes from that. Most of my music is just stories of stuff that I've been through and just how my personal growth is big on me and not fearing change.
Do you think hip hop helps bridge that racial divide that so many people feel?
Absolutely. Because now, especially nowadays, because you have people of every race and nationality that do hip hop. The internet, now you go on TikTok, you go on any of these popular social media sites and you look up, you can see there's white rappers, black rappers, Indian, people from the UK. Like, rap has become so diverse and international now that it's something that everybody gets into.
Come on, we teach grammar through hip-hop,
right? Wait to be 18 and return to my birthplace to investigate what my name means. Met up with Reddit, the renegade of the bank scene. Like, racism is an American construct. You know what I'm saying? When you go to Europe, like, most of their division is religious. They have a lot of religious division. Like, they have, like, your religious sect kind of divides where you are and where you stand. America is one of the, in America, it's not religion. It's your skin color. It's your skin color and your background. Like, but when you go across the pond, Like, they don't, you can see a white Frenchman and a black Frenchman, they don't know any difference. They're Frenchmen. You know what I'm saying? Like, they're both from France. I met a gentleman a few years ago. He's a black man, but he was Polish and African. He was from Poland. And we got into a conversation. We're actually at Palmer Bar. He was at Palmer Bar, and we were sitting there, and we struck up conversation. He's like, yeah, I just got here. He's like, the first place they stationed me was in the South. And he's like, and when I got there, he's like, I didn't understand any of that. He's like, I didn't know I was black till I got off the plane. That's what he told me. He's like, I didn't know I was black till I got off the plane and a white man told it to me. Like, America can't let loose of that construct because they created it. They're obsessed with it almost. Like, that construct has become something that is very much a big makeup of the American society.
Historically speaking, who's Devin's inspiration?
Malcolm X, more than likely. I had to do a huge comprehensive report on Malcolm X when I was younger. So I got to know a lot about him because I read his biography and everything. I think his stance got overlooked a lot because people favored the civil rights movement and Martin Luther King and what he was doing. They favored his position on peace so much. And that was the direction everybody wanted to go in. And they kind of painted Malcolm X as being this violent and not, which was absolutely not true. So I was, you know, I looked up to Malcolm X because what he was trying to say and what he said got taken out of context, but now, years later, makes far more sense. Because the idea of by any means necessary, what Malcolm X said is that we need this. This us being treated as for our human rights and our basic human rights, this is something that we are going to get by any means necessary. Like, and even if we have to fight for it. And that made people scared of him. You know what I'm saying? But as history has taught us, like, there's no revolution and nothing like that ever gets solved without somebody pushing and somebody pushing back.
I had to ask, any inspirational teachers? And without skipping a beat.
Mr. Stanley Harris, he was my music teacher when I went to Palmer High School. My freshman year of high school, he started what was called independent study. They allowed you to independently study under any teacher that was doing. Mr. Harris had a guitar class. I was in his choir class. He knew that I liked it, you know what I'm saying? I was into hip hop and R&B and all of that stuff. So he had got a grant and he used that grant money to buy a bunch of recording equipment for the school. And in the basement of Palmer High, they have those practice rooms. And Mr. Harris came to me and he hands me the key and he's like, I'll make a deal with you, Devin. If you learn how to record and use all of this equipment and you can record my honor and my band students, I will let you have access to this as your own personal studio and you can use it whenever you want as long as you don't break nothing. So all through high school, freshman, sophomore, junior, and senior year, I ran that recording studio and I would record the band and the honor kids. And that's where we cut our first records as UTN out of basement of Palmer High. But yeah, Mr. Harris by far was my favorite teacher and will always be my favorite teacher because if it was not for him, I would not have the career I have today.
Devin had a big shout out too for Josh Freifogel of the Make a Scene paper. Josh pushed for Devin to perform as an opener at the State Fair in 2008. He said that exposure and the confidence and knowing people believed in him made all the difference. Always does, doesn't it? Where can we find your music?
Everywhere, Spotify.
Devin Shaw?
Under D the Lyricist is where a lot of my music is, or under 907 Divinity. We just had a project put out with myself, Ivy Lit, and Charisma.
You can also follow Devin under D the Lyricist on Instagram and Facebook, and AK Rhymefest, all one word, on YouTube.
And all of the artists are on there in alphabetical order, and all of the plays, if you save that playlist, all of the plays go back to the artists. All of everything goes back to all the artists on that page. We don't get anything for that.
One word I ask, just one word. If you could have one word to sum up living in Palmer as Devin Shaw, what would it be?
Amazing. Amazing. That would be the word I'd use. I am such an Alaskan. Like, I identify as an Alaskan first above anything else. So, like, I think we live in the greatest place on earth. To me, this is a paradise. Everything that I would have to say about this place would be positive. You know what I'm saying? Like, no matter what, no matter all the stuff that I've dealt with, like, I've moved my family here. I've raised my family here. I encourage all my family out of state to come here. Like, I'm never going to leave. They will bury me here. One of the things, I'm the king, that's the title I take.
I am the king of the valley, but I'm a child of the bank. And that's it for today's episode of Voices in the Mat-Su, a story that started out about growing up in Palmer when you are the only Black Alaskan in class, and ending up as a story about a rising Alaskan hip-hop artist, a story within a story. Amazing. Amazing grace. And that's how our stories grow. If you have a story or know of someone who does, contact us at voices@bigcabbageradio.org. Until next time, it's been nice getting to know each other a little bit better. Special thanks to the Big Cabbage editorial board and sound editor Emma Keachley. Thanks for listening. Stay good out there, Mat-Su.
This was Voices of the Mat-Su, sharing stories told by those who live in the Mat-Su borough. To revisit this and past stories, go to bigcabbageradio.org. This project is funded by a grant from the Mat-Su Health Foundation and is produced by Emily Forstner for Big Cabbage Radio. The views expressed in Voices of the Mat-Su do not represent the views of Big Cabbage Radio or the Mat-Su Health Foundation. Comments or questions about this show may be sent to voices@bigcabbageradio.org.